Okay, we're starting here from the Mishnah, bottom ayin chetum and bet. The Mishnah says, charitz, sheben bet chatzerot. If you have a ditch that sits between two courtyards, amok yud, the depth of that ditch is 10 tfachim rochav arba'ah, 4 tfachim wide, marvim shnayim ve'em marvim echad. That's considered to be a mechitza, a full-fledged mechitza, and they are forced to have two separate eruvin because they cannot be combined. Now, the amok yud is like any other mechitza, which is the requirement for 10 tefachim to be a mechitza. That's both in height and in depth. The 4 tefachim wide has to do with the fact that if it's less than 4 tefachim, a person could skip over it. They could jump over it, and therefore it's not considered a mechitza, despite the fact that you have a ditch that is 10 tefachim deep. So under 4 tefachim would not be considered to be significant enough, or significant enough width, to make it into a mechitza. Now, afilu malei kash oteben, even if the ditch is filled in with stubble straw, then it's still considered to be a ditch. That does not negate the fact that you have a ditch here. On the other hand, if it's malei afar otzrarot, if it's filled in with dirt or pebbles, marvim echad vein marvin shtayim, then they can make one eruv and not two, meaning that there is no longer any choice over here. They become a single courtyard, a single chatzer, and they must make a single eruv. If he makes a plank, a bridge across the ditch, which is at least minimum of 4 tefachim wide, this plank to walk across the ditch, then you have created the effectiveness of a petach, a doorway. In that case, you have the right to either do it as separate courtyard, separate chatzerot, or to do it together as a single chatzer. V'chein bed gezusterot, zo keneged zo. If you have two protrusions, mir pesot, that are opposite each other in houses over Rishut Rabim, Rashi says over here, you can put a plank across them, and do the same thing. If you have a plank across them that's 4 tefachim wide, then you can make a determination of whether to give them as separate batim, separate houses, or to make a single eruv between these houses. It's the same concept over here. We'll see in the Gemara later on that Tosafot disagrees with that explanation of Rashi. Marvin shnayim, vimratu marvim echad. In both these cases, they have a choice. They can either be separate entities, or they can be a single entity. Pachot mikan, marvin shnayim, ve'in marvin echad. If it's less than this, then they have to be ma'arev two, ve'ein marvim echad, and they cannot be ma'arev one. I mean, if the plank is less than 4 tefachim wide, it does not qualify as being a bridge or a petach. We don't ask you to walk the tightrope across and say that that's considered to be joining the two chatzerot. It has to be something that is usable and that has function in terms of allowing access between the two chatzerot. In that case, it functions as a doorway, as long as the plank is less than 10 amot wide. If less than 10 amot wide, then it can always be considered a doorway. Once you exceed 10 amot, then they would be forced to make a single eruv between them because you no longer have a doorway, but a joint chatzerot at that point. So Gemara says, v'teben lo chaitz, is that really true that straw does not create a chatzitza? Meaning that when you put the straw into the ditch, it doesn't fill it in. Is that really true? V'anan t'nan. We have a Mishnah, it's the next Mishnah in the Gemara, matbein sheben shtei chatzerot. So if you have a storehouse for straw that sits between two chatzerot, gvoa asarat tefachim, if it's 10 tefachim high, marvin shnayim ver marvin echad, then you're forced to make shtei eruvim and not one eruv, because it works as a mechitza. You have a pile 10 tefachim high of straw, it functions as a mechitza, it blocks, it is a separator. So why over there can it act as a separator, and over here when you fill in the ditch, it doesn't act as a solid ground now? Why doesn't it fill in the ditch? You're mixing apples and oranges. There you're talking about mechitza. Here you're talking about chatzitza. Over there by mechitza, kuli amalo pligi davi mechitza. Everybody agrees that anything could be a mechitza. You can have a curtain. You can have a sheet be a mechitza. As long as something is 10 tefachim high and it stays there, then it's a mechitza. There's no necessity for solid walls to be a mechitza. A mechitza is simply anything that separates. So straw can function as a separator. About the inyan chatzitza, you want something to become permanent, to be as if it filled in the ground, to act like the dirt, like you put dirt there and now it's totally filled in. There, ibat le chayitz, ilobat le lo chayitz. If you negate it, if you say, I'm never going to take it out of here, it's going to remain here, then it works. Then it functions and it stays and it's as if you filled in the area. But if you don't state that, then minastam, or the default, is not that straw is going to remain there. People take straw out. Straw doesn't always remain in that place. Now, there is different type of straw, and that is important in this case. We've seen this in the Gemara and Shabbat. There's straw that is mukse, and there's straw that is not mukse. The straw that is not mukse is straw that is used for animal feed. That animal feed that is used on Shabbat, you would utilize it on Shabbat, and you can move it on Shabbat because it's for feeding your animals. That is the type of kash and tevin that we're speaking about here. And then the Mishnah is items that you would otherwise use on Shabbat that are not the mukseh. There is a tevin that is used for mixing up cement. And in construction, that straw is mukseh. And if you placed it in there, it would act as a barrier for Shabbat. We'll see that coming up in the Gemara. Because of the fact that it's mukseh and you can't move it on Shabbat, then at least for Shabbat, it's batel. You can't move it, you can't remove it anymore. So now, malei afar. The Gemara says, v'afilu b'stama. You throw in the dirt to fill in the ditch, even if you say nothing. The Mishnah seems to indicate that it's automatically a fill for the ditch, and there's no longer a ditch here, without any statement. V'atnan. We have a Mishnah. This Mishnah does not exist, even though the Gemara quotes it as a Mishnah, bayit shemil u'a tevin, utzrarot. Person who has a house and fills it in with tevin straw, or utzrarot, or pebbles, u'bitlo. And he says, I intend for this to remain here. I am not planning on taking this straw out. I'm not planning on taking these straw out. Batel. Then it works. It's batel and it's a chatzitza. So bitlo in, lo bitlo lo. Clear here from the Mishnah that you have to actively make a statement that you intend for this item to remain here, not that you intend to remove it. Without that, the default is not that it acts as a barrier or a filler. So why over here in our Mishnah does a tzrarot to act as a filler without any statement that you intend to leave it here? Now, the Mishnah doesn't exist. It's a Mishnah in Ohalot. But Tosafot points out, even though the Mishnah doesn't exist, the pieces of the Mishnah exist in Ohalot. And what the Gemara did was picked pieces from the Mishnah and then summarized the Mishnah. And we've seen that before. The Gemara does this with Psukim as well. So sometimes it quotes pieces of Psukim or it quotes what they think the Pasuk means. Not even the exact words of the Pasuk. They add in words. They thematically try to give you the Pasuk. So sometimes in the quotations aren't exact quotations. They're quotations that give you the feeling of what that Mishnah says, or a summary of that Mishnah, and that's the case over here. So even though if you go to Olot, you will not find a Mishnah in Perek Tedvav, Mishnah Zayin, that says exactly this, the two parts of the Mishnah, if you put them together, basically they're summarizing what it says there, which is that both by Tevin and Sorot, you need to actively mevatel it, whereas our Mishnah doesn't say anything of the sort. So how do we reconcile that? Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, no problem, Mantana Olot, Rabbi Yosihi. Who's the author of Olot, the Mishnayot and Olot? That is Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi as opposed to whoever the author of our Mishnah is over here. So Rabbi Yossi is the author of that Mishnah in Olot. That's a different Tana. The Tana here argues on Rabbi Yossi. How does he know that Rabbi Yossi is the author of Mishnah and Olot is actually somewhat difficult? Because Gemara says here, wait a minute, I Rabbi Yossi, if you think the Rabbi Yossi is the author of that Mishnah Olot, Ipchosh Me'inin Le. We have heard from Rabbi Yossi that he thinks just the opposite. He doesn't say what that Mishnah Olot says. He says exact opposite of what that Mishnah Olot says. The Tanya, we have a Braita. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Tevin, Vein Atid Lifnoto. If you have straw and you have no intent to remove it in the future, Harihu Kistam Afar. Then it functions like dirt on the default basis. Dirt on the default basis means that you're going to leave it there and we don't assume you're going to remove it. Tevin, straw, we do assume you're going to remove it unless you put it there with the intent specifically stating that you're not going to remove it. If you say you're not going to move it, acts like afar. Ubatel. And therefore it's batel. Afar. And you take dirt, vatid lifnoto, and your intent is to remove it later. Hayu kistam tevin. Then it's like the default status of tevin, which is that we assume you're going to remove it. Velo batil, and it's not batel. What Rabbi Yossi is basically saying is, the default status of dirt is to remain. And it is considered to be a filler without any other statements or any other thoughts. On the other hand, the default status of tevin is to remove it. Unless stated otherwise. That is exactly the opposite of what is said in the Mishnah in Olot. The Mishnah in Olot says that you have to actively mevatel both Tzrarot and Tevin. That is not what Rabbi Yossi says. So we have Rabbi Yossi in a Braita who says just the opposite. So Tosafot points out that it's clear here that Rav Huna doesn't know this Braita, but he does know that Rabbi Yossi commented on the Mishnah. He just got it wrong. He said, oh, Rabbi Yossi comments on this Mishnah, so he just assumed Rabbi Yossi was the author of that Mishnah in Olot. It's not the case. The case is that he says just the opposite of what that Mishnah says. And so that's the conclusion here, that Rabbi Yossi is not the author of that Mishnah in Olot. Elam Ravasi, the answer is, Mantanei Ruvin. Who's the author of our Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi? That Rabbi Yossi is the author of our Mishnah, and then it works out well. Rabbi Yossi is the author of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Teven, the default is that it's not going to remain. Afar, the default is it will remain. That's exactly the Shita of Rabbi Yossi in the Braita. So yes, this argues on the Mishnah and Olot, but our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yossi. Mishnah and Olot is authored by a different Tana, and you're right, you have a Machloket Tanaim. But we don't have to reconcile anymore because it's not written by a single Tana. There are different Tanaim with different opinions. And this Mishnah follows that opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Rav Huna b'Rei de Rabbi Yoshua Amar, Tuma Shabbat Karamit. You're asking from Tuma to Shabbat? Now, it's an interesting question. We pointed out this in the past, that the Gemara is replete with instances where they compare Shabbat to Tuma. Throughout Masechet Shabbat, whenever the Gemara wants to know if something's a kli for a Shabbat, whether it's muksa or not muksa, they right away go to Tuma. Tuma is the area in Mishnayot where we have definition of kelim. We have definition of whether something is a keli, not a keli. If it's a keli, it's mekabel Tuma. If it's not a keli, it's not mekabel Tuma. So Gemara goes there to find a definition in Shabbat, whether something is a kli or not a kli, in terms of muksa. So Gemara all the time compares between Tuma and Shabbat. So it's somewhat, you don't want to say that it's a farcical question because the Gemara everywhere else, yes, we do compare between them. And the Gemara does in some places differentiate. But over here, the Gemara makes a point which is well taken. And that is, Hanech Isur Shabbat, Afilu Arnaki Namim Vatelinish. The truth is, yes, we do compare between Shabbat and Tuma, but over here there is something unique about Shabbat. Shabbat has an impact on items that otherwise would not be true. For instance, if a person has a wallet that falls into an area. When it's a weekday, of course the person would pick up the wallet. They'd pick up whatever was there because it wouldn't remain there. They have no intent of having it remain there. On Shabbat, since the wallet is muksa, it's out of their realm on Shabbat, they will be mevatalit. There's no chance they're going to move that item on Shabbat. And because of that, there is an automatic bitul. We know for the remainder of Shabbat, this item will remain there and it will function to fill in the area. And so in this instance, it actually turns out to be that Shabbat has a unique effect on items because of muksa. So for instance, when we talked about the straw before, in the straw, if the straw is for animal feed, you would remove it on Shabbat because you can utilize it to feed the animals. If the straw was straw that came for building or construction, then even though on a weekday you might remove that straw on Shabbat, you will not touch that straw. So the Gabay Shabbat, it will be considered to be a bittul because there's no way you're going to move it for the entirety, the duration of Shabbat. And it will be a bittul. Outside of Shabbat, that won't be a bittul because people will remove it. It'll be removed. So there is a unique aspect to Shabbat that does impact in the dinim over here. And that's what Rav Huna b'Rei de Rabbi Yoshua is pointing out over here. That over here, when you throw in certain items into the ditch, they automatically become mevutal because you're not going to move. You're not moving dirt. You're not moving rocks. Pebbles on Shabbat. That's something you don't engage with on Shabbat. So it might be batel for Shabbat, even though by Olot, it may not be batel, because during a weekday, you might remove such an item. Rav Ashi says, Bayit acharitz karamit. This is apples and oranges. You're comparing a house to a ditch. Bishlam acharitz, the mitaymai kai. Ditches in general are meant to be filled. Ela bayit, the mitaymai kai. A house is not intended to be filled. The default status of a house is to utilize the inside of the house, not to fill in the house. Therefore, if you put objects into the house, our assumption is that you will remove those objects and not leave them there. So unless you state otherwise, the assumption is you're going to take them out. With a ditch, it's the other way around. The assumption is whatever you put there is going to remain there, because that's what you do when you fill in ditches. So now, if you fill it in with dirt, a fire tzrorot, that's something that will remain, and our assumption is that it will remain there, unless you state otherwise. Teven, when you're talking about straw in that instance isn't going to remain. Most people will remove straw, even with relationship to a ditch. That's not how you fill in a ditch. You don't use straw to fill in a ditch. You use items like dirt and rocks and pebbles to fill in the ditch. So that's exactly the difference between our Mishnah and the Mishnah and Olot. The Mishnah is talking about a house. In a house, the default is you're going to remove it. If you state otherwise, then it's fine. But the default is that Tzrot and Teven are going to leave this house, and it's not Batel. Charitz, in our case over here, the assumption is that you're going to fill the ditch. You put in items that are normally used to fill a ditch. That assumption is, the default is you filled the ditch. Teven, which is not used generally, then you have to state that you're filling it in. Otherwise, the default is that you're going to remove the teven from here. Natan alav nesesh ruchav dalit. So you put on a board that is four tefachim wide. It acts as a bridge. That's only if you used it across the width of the ditch. Of the orko. If you place something along the length of the ditch, afilu koshu nami. Then even the smallest amount is sufficient, shari mi ato mi dalit, because then you reduce it below 4 tefachim. We said before that the ditch has to be a minimum of 4 tefachim wide in order to be a separation between the two chatzerot. So there are two ways to overcome the problem. You can put a board across it that allows you to walk across the ditch. For tvachim, why? There's a bridge now across this ditch. And because of that, you can now walk across and make a determination. Is this a petach, not a petach, open or close the door? You can be one chatzer or two chatzerot. On the other hand, if you simply reduce the width of the ditch, then in that case, you don't even need the bridge there. As soon as you reduce it below four tvachim, you no longer have a ditch there. So if you took along the ditch, you took a very thin strip of wood, and you placed it along the edge of the ditch on one side, and now it reduces the width of the ditch below four tvachim, you no longer have a ditch there. If you no longer have a ditch there, by doing so, or not using it across the rachbo, but of course, or ko, along the length of the ditch, you put something there, you can remove the ditch. You can remove the arba tvachim of the width of the ditch, and by doing so, you no longer have a mechitza. Now, depending on how wide you do that, we'll make a determination as to what the status of this reduction is. If it's less than 10 amot, you can call it a petach. And you can say, now I have a petach in the middle of this ditch. If it's more than 10 amot, then the ditch no longer exists. If the ditch doesn't exist at all, then you have to be one chatzer. So in that way, you can also take care of this ditch or separation between the two chatzerot. So we had this in the Mishnah. You have two protrusions, mir pesot, that are opposite each other across the Rishut HaRabim from two houses. So Amarova, Adam mart zo keneged zo in, zo shalek neged zo lo. Implications from our Mishnah is only when they are opposite each other does it work. If they are not opposite each other, then it does not work. Well, not opposite each other can be in two different ways. Not opposite to each other can be on the same plane, they're just offset, sideways. One to the left, one to the right. But you can also have two items that are not opposite each other because one's higher than the other. They're along the same line, but they're not on the same plane. They're one up on top of each other. So Rava says here, that which you say that one opposite the other does work, but that which is not opposite doesn't work, that's Omran Elishyesh Ben Zelizesh Loshat Tvachim. That's only if there's a separation greater than three Tvachim. It's equivalent of a crooked mirpeset. Or, in other words, you can create a single bridge across without any worries. Less than three tefachim is considered to be null or non-existent. So if your offset, whether up or down or side to side, is less than three tefachim, it's as if they are lined up. And if it's as if they are lined up, then you can put a board across them. Even though your board's turned to the right a little bit, even your board's tilted or slanted upward a little bit, as long as it's within three tefachim, that is considered to be opposite each other. What Tosafot asks over here on Rashi's position is, from here it seems like, if you had a board that was on an angle, more than three tefachim away, the two mirpesot were more than three tefachim away, and you have a board that stretches from one to the other, you would not be able to make that into a bridge. Tosafot says, why not? What's wrong? As long as you have a board that's more than four tefachim wide, why does that not function as a bridge? Even if they're more than three tefachim offset from each other, you could have it. You have a bridge that just goes on an angle across the Rishut HaRabim. Why does that not work? Who says that to be a straight line across? Because of that, Tosafot says, I don't think Rashi's explanation of these gezutarot is right. Rashi says the gezutarot are working like the charitz. Just like the solution to the charitz is putting a board across, so too the solution to the gezutarot is to put a board across. And that is why the Mishnah compared them. Tosafot, on the other hand, says no. The Gemara is comparing gezutarot to charitz to tell you when something is considered to be a separation and when something's not. We saw before that a charitz, if it's more than four tefachim, that's a gap. So less than four tefachim is not considered to be a gap. You would skip over it in one shot. So that's what Tosafot says, the gezutarot, not with a bridge across them, rather. You have a case here, we have two mirpesot opposite each other in Rishut HaRabim. They are more than three tefachim away from each other, opposite each other, but they are less than four tefachim away from each other. Can you consider them to be one now? The answer is yes, because you could skip from one mirpeset to the other. The gap is small enough that a person could skip over it without a bridge there. And because of that, it's as if they are attached. It's as if they are joined together. That is only true, and that's Rava's statement over here, that's only true when they are directly opposite each other. They're on the same plane and directly opposite each other. But if they are offset to the right or to the left or up or down, then that's no longer true. Or at least more than three tefachim away, then that's no longer true. If they're more than three tefachim away and they're less than four tefachim, we no longer say you'll skip across and they're considered to be one. Because over there, it's a little more difficult to start jumping across on the angle or up or down. The less than three tefachim that's considered within the range of normal, for whether it's on the same plane or on the same line, that's already normal. You'd step across there without any difficulty. Once you get beyond three tefachim, they're considered to be more difficult to traverse that empty space, even though they're less than four tefachim, and that would be out of this realm of the picture. So Rashi has a comparison of the Gzus Darot to the Charitz is about the solution, the bridge across. Tosafot says it's about the problem, the four tefachim. Why? Just like a Charitz, four tefachim is problematic, less than four tefachim is not a ditch. So it's over here, this Gzus Darot, if they're more than four tefachim away from each other, they're considered to be separate, less than four tefachim, even though they're more than three tefachim away from each other, that is still considered to be one step across, and they're considered to be connected. Even though normally, halachically, three tefachim is considered to not exist. Over here, that amount is slightly more, because we're talking about how much a person would step across, not about the halachic lovud, which says that it doesn't exist. That's how Tosfot explains it. Alright, next Mishnah that we just quoted in the Gemara, Matvein Sheben Shtei Chatzerot. You have a pile of straw that sits between two Chatzerot. Gvoat Sarat Tefachim, it's 10 tefachim high, Marvim Shnaim Ve'en Marvim Echad. Haystack, yeah, exactly. It's a long haystack through the middle of these two chatzerot. They have to be separate now because they have a full-fledged halachic mechitza between them. Elu machlim mikan, ve'elu machlim mikan. Each side can feed their animals from this straw. They can use the haystack and they can feed their animals. Nit ma'eta tevin masarat tefachim. If the haystack now drops below 10 tefachim, marvim echad ve'im marvim shnayim, then they must have a single eruv and not two eruvin because there's no more mechitza between them. They're considered to be a single chatzer. When it was reduced, whether it was on Shabbat or before Shabbat, the Gemara will get to. Let's assume now it happened before Shabbat. So before Shabbat, if it's less than 10, they have to make a single Eruv. If it's more than 10, or 10 and more, then they must make two separate Eruvin. So Amar Ravuna, Bavad, Shlo Yitein L'toch Chupato V'Achil. The fact that you can feed your animals from it is only passively, not actively. You cannot take this hay and put it into your basket and feed it to your animal. What you can do is lukumei shari, that you can take them and bring them over. Now, this is really a bitmia. Can you just bring the animal over here and feed them and have them eat from it? Now, what is the problem with placing it into your kupa? Rashi brings two possibilities of what the problem is. If you actively remove it, one possibility is that you're going to reduce it below 10 tefachim, and you're going to ruin the mechitza on Shabbat. So we don't want you taking it out of the mechitza on Shabbat. So that's one reason. The other possibility is mukse. It's mukse because you were mekatze it for the mechitza, and therefore you can't take from this straw and put it into your basket on Shabbat. So those are one of the two possibilities as to what the problem is. But what we do say here is you're allowed to bring your animal over and have them eat from it. And the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Mamir Adam et Bemto Agave Asavim B'Shabbat. You're allowed to bring your animal to graze by grass on Shabbat, even though the grass is attached to the ground, and there's an Isur D'Oraita of Kotzer of taking this grass out of the ground. Nevertheless, you can take your animal over there, and if they plan on eating from that, they can go ahead and eat. You can direct the animal to eat from there. It's not a problem. We don't worry about the fact that you're going to actually pick the grass for him. He's going to do it on his own, and it's an Isur D'Oraita. We're not worried about that. But in Mamida Damit Bim Tol, Gavim Mukse B'Shabbat. What we don't let you do is put your animal over Mukse on Shabbat. Why? Because we're afraid that you'll engage with the Mukse. We're afraid if you bring your animal to the Mukse and he doesn't eat or he is a little bit reluctant, and you'll start to pick up the Mukse and you'll give it to him. So in Isurei D'Oraita, we don't worry about you actively engaging with the item to feed it to your animal. By Mukse or Isurei D'Rabbanan, we do worry about it. So how come over here you're allowed to bring the animal over directly to the haystack and allow them to eat from it? That's the equivalent of bringing your animal over to something that's muksen and allowing them to eat from it. Or if you say the problem here is mechitza, you bring it over to something that is an isur derabanan to ruin the mechitza on Shabbat, and you're actively engaging your animal with that item. How could you do that? Gemara's answer is similar to what the Gemara says in Bava Kamma, which is the kaimelo ba'apo, va'azlo va'achlo. It's not a case where you directed the animal over there. You didn't take him by the reins and lead him over there. You just stood in his way. You stood in front of him, and the only way he could walk was towards the haystack. You kept basically getting in his way until he walked towards the area that you wanted him to, the haystack. Now, why is that any better? I mean, technically it's grama, but the really answer is you're doing it derech shinoi. Since you're doing it in a manner that is not normal, then already you know that the only reason that he's allowed to eat from here is because the animal's doing it himself and not you. And that will prevent you from actively engaging in the mukse. So if you already go through all these lengths to get the animal over there, and you're doing this in an unusual manner, that in itself is a hekher to remind you not to engage with the mukse, and therefore it's permitted in this case. So Mar says, V'lo yiten l'tochu bato tevin. He can really not take the straw actively and place it into his basket. V'atanyo, we have a brayta. V'ayit sheben shtei chatzerot. You have a house that sits between two courtyards. U'mil'u tevin. And they filled this house with straw. Marvin Shnayim, Marvin Echad. They have to have two eruvim. They can't have a single eruv because the haystack in this house separates between the two chatzerot. It acts as a mechitza between the two chatzerot. Each party or each chatzer can actively engage with this, take the straw out of here and put it into their baskets. If the pile went below 10 tefachim, shnehem asurin, then both of them are asur. Now here it sounds like it happened on Shabbat. Then on Shabbat it went below 10, and now they're both asurim. Ketzad huo set. Then how do you deal with the fact that they're both asurim now when it drops below 10? One of the parties locks the door to their side or their access to this house. And mevatel rushuto, he grants it over, he relinquishes his right to the other party. Hu asur v'chaveiro mutar. He is asur, the one who locked the door and mevatel rushuto is asur. V'chaveiro mutar. And now the other party is mutar to use it because now there's only single ownership of this item. And we have a separation between the two of them. Similar, we would say something, Rashi says, gov here means a ditch. If you have a ditch or a big storage area between two Tchumei Shabbat, you have two cities that are 4,000 amot away from each other. Each one of the cities, 2,000 amot, ends in the middle of this ditch that has straw that's stored inside of it. So the same thing here. They're sharing a ditch or a store area of straw. So the same din applies over there, that they can each access the straw from their side and utilize the straw that is on their side. Tosafot disagrees and says that the word gov is never used by a ditch, but rather gov might come from the shorish givava that we saw in the Gemara in Shabbat in Perek Akira, which is kash vigavava, which is stubble and straw. I mean, those are items that are used to fill. It's the items that are stored there, not where they're stored. But either way, the idea is similar, which is that you have two areas that have access to a portion of some joint item, like the straw over here. The Gemara says, miat. All right, tani miat. From this, at least we can conclude, zeh noten l'toch kupato v'yachil, zeh noten l'kupato v'yachil. The bright is pretty explicit that each party can utilize the straw actively. They can actively engage with it, and it's not a problem on Shabbat at all. So why in our case is it different? So amrei bayit kevin de'ika tikra ki mafchit minkarelei milta achalo minkarelei milta. There's a big difference between a house and an open area. A house has a roof on it. A house that has a roof on it gives you a reference point. If you have a reference point, you're going to know that when you are taking from the straw, you can see the reduction in the straw, and you'll know that you're going below the 10th fachim. Because the reference, you have a reference to the ceiling. The reference to the ceiling already tells you, I'm down, I'm down, I'm down. How far am I moving down? You can then estimate the 10th fachim. If you're in the open courtyard, and you're now taking straw, you have no reference point to tell you whether I'm above 10, below 10. There's nothing else that gives you reference to the height of this item. So outside in the chatzer, we're worried about the fact that you're actually going to go below the 10 tefachim point. Over there in the house, we're not worried about you going below the 10 tefachim point because of the reference to the ceiling, which will make you aware of the fact that you're reducing it down to that level of 10 tefachim. Now, according to the two reasons that Rashi gave before, what was the problem with engaging in this pile? One was mukse, and the other one was that we don't want you reducing the mechitza below 10 tefachim. So now I understand not reducing the mechitza below 10 tefachim in the courtyard because we're worried about you taking it down. Mukse, I'm also worried about it because you designated it as a mechitza coming into Shabbat. It's a functional mechitza. We don't want you engaging with it. But now in the house, how do I explain that? In the house, I understand the 10 tefachim thing again because you can engage with it until the point of 10 tefachim because we know you're going to be okay. But mukseh, what about mukseh? If it's mukseh, it's mukseh. The answer is that mukseh is the part that acts as the mechitza. The only thing that is mukseh is up to 10 tefachim is mukseh. Above 10 tefachim is an excess of the mechitza. That doesn't need to be there for the mechitza, and that is not mukseh, and that's why you're allowed to engage in it. You'll have to take that which is above 10 tefachim because that is not mukseh. You did not leave that there or designate that to be the mechitza. What you designate to be the mechitza is until the point that you need. The halachic mechitza, that's 10 tefachim. Above that is excess. That excess is not mukseh on Shabbat. So therefore, inside of the house, you're permitted to engage with it until 10 tefachim. You're permitted to take from it as long as you don't go below the 10 tefachim. In the chatzer, we don't allow you to engage in it at all because of the fear that either you'll get to the 10 tefachim point and be engaging in mukse or you'll ruin the mechitza either, which is a problem on Shabbat. Now the Gemara says, Nitva'ita tevin masarat tefachim shneim asurim. If it goes below 10 tefachim, they're both asurim. Ha, asara shari. As long as it's 10 high, it's mutar. Even though it's way below, or the ceiling is way above that area. Gemara says, wait a minute. This is in a discussion that we just had by the truck clean.
We had a machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai within a palatial estate. What is considered to be a mechitza between the different areas for the parties that are living or residing in this truklin? And over there, the Gemara wants to know, does the mechitza have to reach the ceiling? Does it have to reach the ceiling? Machloka Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, different opinions. Now we have a conclusion. Shema mina, mechitzot, shemi go, the tikra, shman mechitzot. If mechitzot don't reach the ceiling, they are called mechitzot. Because over here you see you're allowed to reduce the pile down to 10 tefachim and it's not a problem despite how high the ceiling is. And that shows you that you don't have to have mechitzot that reach the ceiling. Now, we're talking about here, what these are mechitzot arai. Talking about putting up a sheet. If you have a solid wall, 10 tefachim is considered the mechitzah everywhere. It doesn't matter for whom and in what situation. That is a mechitzah. The question is, when you're using items that are not permanent in nature, like sheets or other types of separators, do they have to reach the ceiling or not reach the ceiling? So Tevin falls into that category of something that's not a permanent mechitzah. It's a temporary mechitzah. And because of that, we want to know, is it considered mechitzah even when it doesn't reach the ceiling? The answer is, Shma mino, mechitzot, shemi geod, tikra, shman mechitzot. So now we have other answers by the Amorim that you don't have to conclude that, which is Amar Abaye, Hocha b'bayit shlosha asar chaser mashu askinan. Now we're dealing with a house that is 13 tefachim high minus a little bit. Well, if it's 13 tefachim high minus a little bit, and you have to maintain 10 tefachim high on the pile in order to mechitza, how far is the top of the pile from the roof? Less than 3 tefachim. Less than 3 tefachim is lavud. So then that's why it's considered as if it reaches the ceiling. You can't conclude anything from this. The ceiling is higher than the pile. It's just not high enough to be considered separate because it's within 3 tefachim at the top of the pile. That's one way to deal with it. Ravuna b'Rabbi Yehoshua Amar afilu teima b'bayit asara. Even in a house that is 10 tefachim high, b'tevin sheva umashu. And in cases where tevin is shiva umashu, is 7 and a little more tefachim, because anything that is less than 3 is considered to be a solid area. So over here, you don't even need 10 tefachim in the pile. If your roof is, your ceiling is 10 tefachim high, and you take your pile down to 7 plus a little bit, then the pile is less than 3 tefachim from the roof, you have your mechitza of 10 tefachim without either having the pile be a 10 tefachim. So he says you could have a 10 tefachim high ceiling and then take down the pile to 7 plus because you still have a mechitza then in that case. Anything less than 3 tefachim is considered to be lavud, as if it is solid, as if it doesn't exist. Now Gemara says, Bishlam alo abayayinu diktani me'asara. Then in the Braita it says that you may not reduce it below 10 tefachim. That makes sense according to Abaye. Because Abaye is saying you're talking about a house that is a little less than 13 tefachim. You must keep the pile at a minimum of 10 to keep it as a mechitza. Plus, it's connected to the roof in that case, to the ceiling. But, Elo the Ravuna, Brei the Rabbi Yeshua, Mai Me'asara. What do you mean you can't reduce it below 10? According to him, you can reduce it all the way down to 7 plus, and it's still a good mechitza. So why is 10 the threshold? The answer is, Mitorat Asara. It's not that you can't reduce it below 10 tefachim. You can't ruin it from being a halachic 10 tefachim. Halachic 10 tefachim means you can't go below 7 because then it takes it out of the world of 10 tefachim. Once you go below 7 plus, then you're no longer within lavud of the ceiling and now you've lost your mechitza. So you're taking it out of the world of 10. Not that it's 10 tefachim high, but you're taking it out of the world of 10 tefachim high by reducing it below 7. Right. Halachic mechitza you're ruining here. Not that the actual straw is 10 tefachim. Shneim asurin. If it goes below 10, they're both asur. Shma mina. Diurim abayim b'shabbat. The girsa probably here is usrin. People that show up on Shabbat ruin the situation. So we've had this before in the Gemara. Gemara says, what happens if the situation changes on Shabbat? Do we say because hutra the Shabbat, you became into Shabbat when it's mutar, that status doesn't change in Shabbat? Or if we introduce new parties on Shabbat, they can actually ruin the mechitza, they can ruin the eruv, they can ruin the situation. From our bright over here, it sounds like that people on Shabbat or the change in the situation can ruin it on Shabbat. Came into Shabbat, it was 10 tefachim high. They start taking from it on Shabbat, and sure enough, it's below 10 tefachim now. Shnehem asurim. Even though when they entered Shabbat, there was a full-fledged mechitza over here, and they were separate entities. So coming into Shabbat, they should have been just fine. Yet, in the middle of Shabbat, it changes, and now we say they're asurim. What does that prove? It proves to you that when something happens in the middle of Shabbat, they are asurim. So Gemara says, no, Dilma im eit mi etmol. Who says that the Braita is talking about a case where it went under 10 tefachim on Shabbat itself? Could have been that it went under 10 tefachim before Shabbat, and that's what the Braita is telling you. If it's 10 tefachim going into Shabbat, it remains that way, fine. If you before Shabbat are less than 10 tefachim, you can't use that as a mechitza. You must function as one chatzer and two batim on each side are now one bayit. It doesn't work as a mechitza anymore. Nothing to do whether it happened on Shabbat, didn't happen on Shabbat. We don't know when it happened. It's just, this is the reality now. You have to deal with that reality. And we have no proof then that if it's reduced on Shabbat, what would be our attitude towards it? Okay, said Huo said, what does he have to do here? Noelet beito mevatel rishuto. He has to lock the door and then relinquish his control over that area, which is the shared area. Mar says, Tarti? You need both? You need him to lock his door and be mevatel rishut? So hachi kamar. Now this is what it means. O noelet beito o mevatel rishuto. You can do either or. You either lock the door, which is the equivalent of relinquishing control. By locking the door, you're indicating that you have no intent now to access this area, utilize this area, which is the equivalent of relinquishing your rights to this area. Or you say, I'm a vato reshut. One of the two is sufficient. Vi baitemon, some say lo olam tarte. You need two over here. Came in the dashpe ate litultule. Since you regularly enter this area, we need you now to separate yourself from this area because you otherwise would have gone in there. You don't have any reason not to go in there. You've been going there all this time, and now all of a sudden we say no. So we say you have to lock the door to remind yourself. Rashi says that this has broad implications, that this position is true for any bitul reshut. When you have bitul reshut, not only do you have to be in vatul reshut, you have to separate yourself out from that area so you don't utilize it. Tosafot says, then you're going to have a situation. A person lives in a chatzer. He forgot to join the Eruv. He's mevatel his bayit to the chatzer now. What's he going to have to do according to Rashi? He's going to have to lock the door to his house. So now what is he, stuck in his house all of Shabbat? He can't traverse the chatzer. He can't walk out of the chatzer. We said he can't walk out of the chatzer. He just can't carry in the chatzer. He's allowed to go out. But Tosafot says, okay, maybe we'll answer. When he's in the house, he has to keep the door locked. When he leaves the house, he opens the door and locks it again after he leaves. He'll just have to keep the door locked at all times to remind himself that he can't just carry out into the chatzer. But he can't exit the house. That's the way he tries to explain for Rashi. But he says he thinks the better interpretation here is that this case is unique. That is not true by normal chatzer. By normal chatzer, you only require your mevatel reshut, and that's it. The locking the door is not necessary in that case. Over here, you need bitul reshut, and you need to lock the door. As Rashi describes over here, the bitul reshut is what makes it mutar to utilize it. The locking of the door is what changes the dynamic here, that this person won't re-enter and utilize it. Now, you might for two reasons want that. One is possibility is that if he goes back and utilizes it, that it might undermine the bitul reshut. We've seen that in the past. If a person carries into the chatzer on Shabbat after he's mevatel reshut, machloket tanaim as to whether he's mevatel the reshut. B'shogeg. B'mezi, we're not going to assume he does it intentionally. To do this, b'shogeg, he might do it by accident. If he does it by accident, it undermines the Eruv, then you'd be worried about that. So over here, you might be worried about the fact that he enters it. But what's more important here is that this person, until this point in time, has been utilizing it. In a case where a person carries into the chatzer, he wasn't carrying into the chatzer before. There was no Eruv before. Because he forgot to join the Eruv, nobody was carrying. Now when he's mevatel reshut, he is not changing what he was doing until this point in time. He didn't carry till now. He continues not to carry. The bitul reshut doesn't change any dynamic for him. Over here, that's not true. Until this point in time, this guy used to enter into this room and take out straw from here. All of a sudden, he does bitul reshut. He can no longer access it. His status has changed midway. He used to be able to take straw out. Now he can't take straw out. Because of that, he must lock the door. Something changed in the middle for him. When it changes in the middle, we need an extra barrier there to stop him from accessing it, and that is to lock the door. So that's what Tosafot says. It's unique to this case, where he was, until this point, accessing it. We gotta put a doorway, we gotta lock it, so he doesn't continue to access it. In a situation where before he wasn't accessing it, and now he's not accessing it, we don't need a locking. And therefore, Tosafot says, it's only for this Shabbat he has to lock it. In the subsequent Shabbat, where they enter and it's already below 10 tefachim, he does not need to lock the door. Because locking the door is not necessary anymore. He enters the Shabbat, they can't use it. He continues through Shabbat, he can't use it. That's not a problem at all. Next part of the Braita. Braita says, Hu asur v'chaveru mutar. He's asur and his friend is mutar. What else would you have thought happens? He's mevatel's reshut, he locks the door. So fine, he's asur and the friend is mutar. It's exactly what you would expect to happen. Why does the Braita explicitly say this? Pshita. Of course, that's obvious. Lo, tzricha d'hadar idach batul le'chavre. The second party now goes back and relinquishes control back to the first party. V'akamash melon. That teaches us the aim of atlin v'chazirim of atlin. You can't do that. You can only relinquish once control. You can't have relinquishing control pamayim, twice. That was a machloka we saw back in Rav and Shmuel, whether you can do it one time or multiple times. Here's the answer is that you cannot be vato v'chozer mevato. So now we have a conclusion from this braita. V'chein atar mo b'gov shel terem ben shnei tchumei Shabbat. You have this, whether it's a pile of straw or a ditch full of straw that sits between the two tchumei Shabbat. Mar again says, pshita, that's simple. What do you mean? It's simple, of course. It should be no different than the case of Chatzerot, where you're sharing a joint area. In the Chatzerot, you said you could take straw from this side, you could take straw from that side. Why by Tchumei Shabbat should it be any different? Why can't the parties who can reach halfway to the ditch take from their side, and the parties on the other side take from their side? It's no different than the case in the Tevin that's sitting inside the house. Why should you think otherwise? I says, well, she called Rabbi Akiva. We need this Rabbi Akiva. What's unique about Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva believes tchumim are deoraita. So he says, tchumim deoraita, madutem, I would have thought l'gzor dilma atele chlufe. Then I would make a gzera. Over here, when you're dealing with dine derabonon, we say, okay, let each party take from either side. What happens? At worst, the worst situation is that they take from the other side or they do something wrong. They're only in violation of an isur derabanan. Over here by Rabbi Akiva, if we let them do this, and they do something wrong, they're in violation of an isur d'oraita of tchumin. So maybe over there we would say, don't let each party take from either side. The answer is, yes, we do let them. Even in the face of an isur d'oraita, we don't assume that the parties or the different tchumei Shabbat will extend themselves over to the other side and take from the other side. We don't worry about that. The first case I'm at Eruv Chatzerot. This one's talking about Tchumei Shabbat. So one's an Issa Darabon and one's an Issa Doraita. At least according to Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, we would have thought to differentiate. And the answer is the Braita says don't differentiate. And that's why it's a Chiddush. Next Mishnah. Ketzad Mishtatfim B'mavoy. How do you make a Shituf Mivaot? Again, right, like always in the Mishnayot, you would have loved to have this a lot earlier in the Masechta, teach you how to make a Shituf Mivaot. But here's how you make a Shituf Mivaot. Meniach et Chavit. V'omer, harizu duchol b'nei mavoy. He can put out a barrel of wine and say that I grant rights to anybody who is in the mavoy, umezakela hem ayidei b'no b'ito agdolim, and then he has, on behalf of those other parties, he has his children who are of age take possession of it, lift it up, or yidei abdov shivchato ayivrim, or uses his Jewish maidservants or slaves, I mean ebed ivri and a shivcha or ama ivriya, by a day ishto, or through his wife. Aval enu mizakeh lo yedei b'no b'to aktanim. He cannot use his children who are minors. V'lo yedei abdov shivchato aknanim b'nei sheyadan ki yado, because they are considered to be extensions of him. This is true in any type of kinyan. If you, for instance, today, if you bring a gift on Shabbat, sometimes if you're not makneh to the other person, I can't give kinyanim on Shabbat, because the problem is a mekach homemgar. If before Shabbat you want to grant the gift to the other person, then you could have someone pick it up on their behalf. You can be mizakeh for someone else. Zikui, something that's to their benefit. Other people can take possession for them and act on their behalf. You can make them agents or proxies for those individuals without their knowledge, because it's all to their benefit. So before Shabbat, if you're going to do this, you have to have a party, an independent party, take it up or pick up the item. If they're not an independent party, then they can't act. So if you take your child and ask them to pick it up on their behalf, that doesn't do anything. That's basically asking your right hand to lift up for the left hand. Children are basically extensions of the parent. And so too, with an Eved Kenani or a Shivcha Kenani, they're considered to be extensions of the parent. As extensions of the parent, or the master, they cannot act independently. What you need are children of age, or an Amai Ivri, or an Eved Ivri, who have independent acquisition rights to act on behalf of the other parties. Now it's true, the Gemara in Baba Metzia has a machloket about when we say Gadol and Katan, do we literally mean a minor and someone of age? Or does Gadol and Katan have to do with their independence? And there the Gemara has an opinion that it has to do with independence. That a Gadol who eats by their father's house and depends on the support of their father, they are considered to be one with their father. They are not considered to be a separate entity from the father. So Tosfot over here says maybe that applies here as well, or maybe we can distinguish over there. There might have to do with the fact that there's going to be animosity. The child doesn't give his aveda to the father, then there's going to be animosity. He's supporting the child. He's not giving him the things that he finds. He's not giving him the money that he makes. But over here, where that's not the issue, maybe they can be viewed as separate entities. But just be aware of the fact that when we talk about Gadol and Katan here, doesn't necessarily mean the threshold is bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah. It could be that the threshold is higher. It has to do with dependence and independence, and that might be the threshold over here. As far as a wife is concerned, the wife can only function as the agent for the other parties when she has separate ownership from the husband. And so the Gemara Nedarim establishes that this case here is talking about a case where the woman has a bayit in that mavui. She has a separate bayit in that mavui, a migo, that she can take care of her own bayit, or it can be koneh on behalf of herself. She then can be koneh on behalf of the others. But if that's not the case and she is subsumed under the ownership of her husband, then her taking the kinyan on behalf of the others doesn't do anything, because again, it becomes an extension of the kinyan of the husband, and there is no independent party acting as an agent over here. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Chavit shel shitufei mevaot tzarich lagbia min hakarka tefach. And in order to acquire the kinyan for the shittif mo'od, you have to raise it off the ground a tefach, a minimum of a tefach. Tosfot over here says, don't conclude from here, that every hagbah, every type of kinyan hagbah requires a tefach off the ground, because maybe over here we're more makil, because it's just shittif mo'od. Just a din d'rabbanan that we're doing, so they granted a tefach's fine. Maybe by hagbah you need more than that, so you'd have to lift it up even higher. Maybe you need three tefachim off the ground to do it. So don't conclude anything from here about hagbah. But basically, that if you're going to give your wine over to the other parties for their benefit, to have a shittuv mivot, and someone's going to acquire it on their behalf, they have to lift it at least a minimum of a tefach off the ground to have a kinyan. Amarova, hane tarte mile sabe de pumpadita amrinu. Rabbi says, these two memrot, the elders of Pumpadita said them. Chadaha, one of them is what we just read over here, which is this, chavit of shutei mivot. If you want to make a kinyan in it, you have to lift it up a tefach. Ve'idach, the other one is hamikadesh. The one who makes kiddush imtam alo mulgav yotza. If you taste the amount of a cheekful, you are done. You're yotze that kiddush. Vimav. If not, lo yotza. Then you're not yotze. Interesting. Tosafot discusses what is a malo lugmav. It's a cheekful. He said it doesn't literally have to be a cheekful. It just has to be that if you move the wine over to one side, it looks like you have a cheekful. So not literally a cheekful. The other thing he says is from the Gemara in Yoma, it sounds like a malo lugmav is greater than a revit. They said that creates huge problems. Tosafot mentions it here, but he doesn't deal with it. He deals with it in the other places. But it's clear that can't be the case. And lo lugmav has to be less than a revit, because the minimum shear, the shear for kiddush and for kosot is a revit. If you have to consume a minimum of lo lugmav to be yotze, and the kos is only a revit, then how are you going to get to lo lugmav if lo lugmav is greater than a revit? That can't be the case. So lo lugmav has to be less than a revit. What we generally say is the mikadesh, the one who is making the kiddush himself, the best situation is that he himself has a malo lugmav, and then he can share the wine with others to get to rov kos. Rov kos can be contributed by the other parties. Malo lugmav is what he should drink. But we also know that through a revut, that even if he drinks nothing from the kos kiddush, then the other parties, they drink from the kiddush, as long as he's a rev to them. They are both yatsa motzi. Even if he was yotze already's kiddush, he can make kiddush on their behalf, and they drink from it, then it works. The best thing is for him to drink from it. But even if he doesn't drink from it, and the other parties drink from it, it does work in terms of kiddush. As far as the best situations, if you make kiddush, you should distribute the wine to others, but you should make sure that the one who's mikadesh at least takes a cheekful and a log lug of wood. Amar Rav Chaviva, hanami savi debute aminu. I have a third thing that the elders of Pumbedita said. Damar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Now Pumbedita is the city of Shmuel. So you can see that the items that they're quoting from here are Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda is a Talmud of Shmuel. They're quoting these memrot that come from Pumbedita. These are the savi, the elders of Pumbedita. So now, Damar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, osim midura lechaya b'shabbat. You can make a fire for a woman who is a kimpador, someone who has given birth. Immediately after giving birth, she's considered to be a chola, she is basakana. In that case, you can make a fire on Shabbat for her benefit. We would think that that's only true for a woman who is postpartum, but not for a chola, not for someone who's sick. Bimota shamimin, only when it's wintertime, bimota chamalo, but if it's summertime, you also can't make. So now, itmar, Rav Chiya bar Avraham bar Shmuel, hekiz dam, vinitzdane, person lets blood, and it's cold. Osim lo medura b'shabbat. You can make for him a fire on Shabbat to warm up, afilu b'tkuvat tamuz. Even tkuvat tamuz, which is the summer solstice, in the middle of the summer, you can still make for him a fire. So obviously he didn't let blood on Shabbat itself. He let blood before Shabbat, but he's left then with that sensation of feeling cold. When you give blood, in general, you do feel cold. So here he's left with this sensation of being cold. And yet we see he can make the fire, number one, on Shabbat, because he's a choleh. And number two is, even in the summer times. It's not that Sabei Bepumbedita said this. They said it about the case of Chaya. You could extrapolate that to choleh and to summertime. The Gemara wanted to medayek that only that and not others. The Gemara says in the end, that's not true. Because we have another memra from Shmuel that clearly says that this has broad application to any choleh, sheish bo sakana, and any time of year. It doesn't matter what time of year. If you need fire, if you need heat, then we allow you to do it on Shabbat. Amma meimar hanami sabi de Pumbedita aminu. Here's another item that we know from the elders of Pumbedita. Ditmar izu ashera stam. What is considered to be an ashera? We saw that on Daf on Shabbat, that they wanted to use an ashera as a ladder. An ashera is a tree that is worshipped for Avodah Zarah. How do you know if the tree is designated for Avodah Zarah or not? They don't write ashera on it, they don't hang a sign on it. How do you know that it's an ashera? So Amarav, kol shemishartei ovadat gililim shomrim ota. Any tree which is guarded by the priests of the Avodah Zarah, ain to amim miperuta, and they don't eat its fruits. It's like kodesh. It's kodesh. So they make sure that nobody takes from the tree. They protect the tree. Plus, they don't eat from the fruits. Shmuel Amar, kigom de amre hane tamre de shichva de bein etzarfe de shatu le biyom chagam. If they tell you that these fruits they're keeping to make beer or a drink for bein etzarfe is a type of Avodah Zarah, is a location of Avodah Zarah, de shatu le biyom chagam, that they drink it on their holidays. So it's not that they're not using the fruits. It's not that they're keeping people away from it, but they tell you, these fruits they're going to utilize to make drinks for their holiday, the holiday of Avodah Zarah. Fabru li sabe de pumpetita, and the elders of pumpetita told me, hilchata kavate de Shmuel. The locha is like Shmuel. So sabe pumpetita, who live in pumpetita, city of Shmuel, they say that the locha is like Shmuel in this case. So there's another statement of sabe de pumpetita. Meiteve. Our Mishnah, Ketzad Mishtatfim. How do you make a Shituf Mavoy? Mevin Chavit Shel Yain V'Shel Shemen. You bring wine, oil, Shel Tamarim, or dates, Ugrugoro, to dried out figs, V'Shel Sharmine Peirot, or any other fruits. Im Mishelo, if it belongs to him, Tzarich L'Zakot. He has a grant rights to it to the other parties. V'Im Shelahen, if it's there, Tzarich L'Odia. Then he has to tell them about it. U'magbiya min HaKarkai, he lifts it off the ground. Mashu, any amount, he lifts it off the ground and it works. Whether the lifting off the ground is to grant them the rights in it, or the lifting off the ground is after he tells them that I'm going to utilize our joint barrel over here full of fruits, I'm going to use that for the Shituf Mavot. He has to lift it up to designate it as the Shituf Mavot. Mashu, not a tefach. That's a problem for what we just saw from the Sabe de Pumpetita, that you have to lift up a tefach. My mashu, nami de kamar, a tefach. A tefach is a mashu. It's not something that has significance generally in halacha. It's like a mashu. So tefach and mashu are used interchangeably in this case. And that's why they use mashu. That's not that it argues, but simply that the mashu that they're discussing over here is the tefach. Okay, we'll stop over here. Oh.